At Grand Canyon University, we believe in equal opportunity, and the American dream starts with purpose. Whether your pursuit involves a bachelor's, master's, or doctoral degree, GCU's learning environments are designed for supportive networking and collaboration. With over 330 academic programs, GCU provides a path to help you fulfill your dreams. The pursuit to serve others is yours. Find your purpose at GCU. Private, Christian, affordable. Visit gcu.edu.
I'm Scott Weinberger, journalist and former deputy sheriff. In my new podcast series, Cold Blooded, I'm embedded in the cold case investigation into the death of firefighter Billy Halpern. Experience this investigation in a truly unique way, untangling secrets that may reveal the answers to not only one case, but almost a dozen. Listen to Cold Blooded, the Apollo Gym Murders on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
In the recent history of documentary filmmaking, one scene stands out above all. The hot mic bathroom confession of Robert Durst in The Jinx. Now the person responsible for that moment, Sareb Kaufman, stepson of the victim, friend of the murderer, star of the documentary, for the first time ever, shares why he believes you're watching the furthest thing from the truth on this exclusive episode of Murder Homes. Listen to Murder Homes on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
From UFOs to psychic powers and government conspiracies, history is riddled with unexplained events. You can turn back now or learn the stuff they don't want you to know. A production of iHeartRadio.
Hello, welcome back to the show. My name is Matt. Our colleague Noel is not here today, but will be rejoining us shortly.
They call me Ben. We're joined, as always, with our super producer, Paul Mission Control Deccant. Most importantly, you are here, and that makes this the stuff they don't want you to know. Matt, are you a fan of canned seafood? I was talking to Paul earlier this evening about this.
Yes, I actually really am. Back in the old How Stuff Works days, I would either bring a can of soup for my lunch or one of those. It's like it would be tuna and like some crackers and I think a little packet of mayo.
With the little mint?
Yeah, because I could afford it. And till I realized how much salt was in the soup. And some things about the canned food industry.
Here we go, right? Yeah, man, I remember this as well. Also, for everyone listening, Matt and I often in our earlier days, in our salad days, Matt and I could not afford salad. so we would get what are essentially civilian rations. Mm-hmm. You know, and sometimes they'd spice it up, right? Sometimes you could get the tuna retort pack with a little bit of habanero in it, a little bit of jalapeno in it. And we ate these things while we were breaking our hearts, making crazy, crazy stuff on the internet. Matt,
we never stopped.
We've never stopped breaking our hearts. And our pal Matt, you remember our pal Scott Benjamin, mm-hmm. right, from Car Stuff? He famously doesn't get music, and also does not like seafood. Do you know anyone else that doesn't care for seafood?
Oh, no. My son, gosh, you guys, this is, if you want to know something that'll break the bank, have an almost 8-year-old that decides he loves sushi.
What?
Because how do you tell him no? No, I'm just joking.
I don't. He likes sushi though?
Yeah, he does. And not the kind that I should be buying. Anyway, it's tough out here for sushi dad. What?
It's tough out here for the sushi dad. Also sushi is reliant on freshness, right?
Yeah.
So canned tuna sushi is more TikTok flex than something you would see at that fancy restaurant. Funny story, while we're in our seafood disclosure, one time years and years ago, Matt, I learned about the best sushi restaurant in Atlanta because you told me the day after you accidentally walked in.
Wait, what is it? Is it the Kura Revolving Sushi Place?
No. Like, it was a big deal. I still haven't gone. I don't know if I can afford it.
Oh, okay. Kura's my jam. Revolving sushi is the thing, man. I love it.
I love it. I love the I love the little conveyor belt.
Yes.
You know what I mean? I love the gamification of it.
Yeah. Right? If you're good at it, you could trick the system to not spend too much money. Wait, figure it out. You eat the expensive stuff that's just the same price as the not expensive stuff.
Okay, right on, bro. But seafood's not for everyone, but the people who like it, like Matt and like me and like many of us listening tonight, people who like seafood love it. In the U.S. alone, canned or tinned fish sales were estimated to be around $9.5 billion.
No way.
2022.
Wow. Okay.
That's a lot of cans, you know?
Well, think about the number of fish that equals, right? Like, that's a ton of fish to be processed and canned and then eaten. Wow. Okay.
Yeah. And especially considering, as we'll find this evening, that many of the... It's kind of like how the Europeans were when they were scarfing up buffalo. They don't use all of the fish, right? Only specific parts of a maritime organism make it into the can. And people love it. Apparently, the canned fish sales in the U.S. are anticipated to reach $17.2 billion over the next decade. It's massive.
Well, okay, now just quickly here for my math, and I'm thinking back to the How Stuff Works times, I did buy that stuff a lot in bulk when I couldn't afford other foods, when, you know, like right out of college, working, you know, first job kind of stuff.
Something I wonder, other than ramen noodles, right?
Yeah, oh yeah, no, for sure. But I wonder how much of that is a global shift or at least a U.S. shift towards not being able to afford other kinds of foods, right? And we know this. We know the squeeze is on for everybody when it comes to just making your dollars go a little bit further. That would make sense if they're anticipating a huge growth like that.
Mm, yeah, agreed. And the problem is, like we always say, when you get to a certain threshold of finance, you get to inevitable corruption. There is something, forgive us, fishy about the seafood industry. Matt, I apologize to you for that one.
I guarantee you it will not be the last one in this episode.
Okay, good. Yeah, you're going to come with some fire as well, I think. We're going to give a shout out to my girlfriend, Brandy Supra, who hipped us to this absolutely unclean thing. There is a conspiracy at the heart of canned seafood, ready-made seafood. If you are walking through a Walmart or you're walking through a Tesco, there is some stuff they don't want you to know. Here are the facts.
Yes. So this concept of preserving seafood in a tin, a can of some sort, has been around for a long time. It's a technology, let's say, that really made its strides in the 1800s. And human beings have been eating seafood in this way for a long time, largely because, again, fish is something you need to either eat fresh or find a way to preserve it as soon as you catch it, right? So that's why, you know, the behemoths of the industry grew so much when they did, because as soon as you've got a good setup where there's fresh fish coming in and you've got a facility where you can process that fish and get it in these cans and get it on a shelf somewhere, it'll last for a decade. I mean, at least some of the techniques have improved, but you can, this stuff has a crazy long shelf life. So once you get started, boom.
You're in. Yeah, mm-hmm. man. And canneries are weird for anyone living outside of the U.S. or for anyone who has lived off the grid in the U.S. You should know that canneries are one of the easiest ways to make off the books money. You will just be in a really gross situation for a season, and then you can be on your way to your rainbow gathering or hop a freight or what have you. Matt, what you point out is that you and I were kind of early adopters, childhood adopters of this sort of preparation.
Well, our parents, I don't know about your parents, but my parents had always had tuna in the house, canned tuna. And it would be a part of a meal, like a family meal, once or twice a week.
Did you guys do like tuna casserole?
Yeah, yeah, exactly. The whatever those things were called back in the day, just add the tuna, and it's got the, you know, the noodles in a box or whatever, and you're
bro,
good to go.
Tuna helper.
That's it. That's the stuff. but I wonder how much of it is a generational thing, because you know that's 80s to 90s for me, like up into about the year 2000. And I wonder how much of that fell away as the generational shift, you know, is coming into us being parents now. Right. Cause I don't serve my son a lot of canned fish.
And, as the Templar said to Indiana Jones, you have chosen wisely. So let's look at this. I love this timeline, man. So 2020, 2019, 2020, another pandemic hits. We get a lot of love on this show for quote unquote predicting that, but we just looked at the math and it was statistically inevitable. The next one is also statistically inevitable. In 2020, a lot of people were surprised. I can't go out anymore. You know, my institutions that upon which I rely are failing. So the folks who used to shop at a grocery store as just sort of civilian level people all of a sudden started thinking a little more in terms of preparation, in terms of if things go sideways, will I have enough to eat until the rule of law returns? And so they bought a lot of canned fish. Canned fish reached this massive, like Mariah Carey at Christmas level of popularity. And then amid all this, there was a TikTok, what do we call it? A trend, a TikTok trend that went viral.
Yeah.
Did you see this one?
Oh, I did see this one. This was a concept of creating like a charcuterie board. I don't know how to say that. Whatever. I don't have enough of them to pronounce it often enough to know how to say it. So, but it's the thing where you get a board and you put a bunch of meats and cheeses and stuff on it, and olives maybe if you're real fancy. But in this case, it was different cans of different fish, right? With that are canned in different substances. Some in water. Some in oils. Some in tears, I guess. I don't know.
Foreshadowing a bit.
Mm-hmm. Yes, but it was just a very popular thing. I don't know how much we can say that TikTok contributed to it. I think, Ben, what your point about just everybody was seeing a potential future that not everyone had thought about, right? I can always go to the grocery store, we all thought.
Yeah. Oh, gosh, what will you do when you walk in the grocery store and nothing's on the shelf? Americans are not familiar with that experience, by and large. What will you do when the grocery stores close their doors, right? Shout out to Stickman. The point is, this is a big business. You don't have to like seafood to be affected by the seafood industry. And we've talked in the past about overfishing, ocean acidification, all these kinds of things. They're very unsexy conspiracies because they are true and they are happening now as you listen this evening. Matt, I want to shout you out and ask you a little bit more about some of the shenanigans you found regarding price fixing. Price fixing for tinned seafood accelerated during the pandemic and originated before people started panicking, especially with, of course, the most popular canned seafood in the United States, canned tuna. You know, are you getting albacore? Are you getting the fancy one?
Oh, I don't know. It said like what chunk tuna, something chunk tuna. That's all I remember.
The chicken of the sea.
Yeah. So chicken of the sea, bumblebee tuna, and Starkist are the three big canned tuna manufacturers. For a long time, they controlled 80% of the market share. So 80% of all canned tuna was those three companies. One of those three
in the
companies.
U.S. or in the world?
That was at least that was in the U.S. for sure. And there's several other major companies like in South Korea, Thailand, several other places that have huge like global market shares, I guess. But if you're in the U.S. and you're buying tuna for a long time, there's an 80% chance it was one of those. And in 2015, they got looked at by the Department of Justice for doing some really strange, not cool things, basically functioning as a cartel from 2011 to 2013. There were several lawsuits. There were lots and lots of fines paid. We could probably do a whole episode just on this. But Chicken of the Sea basically gave up. You know, I've got a bunch of stuff in here, Ben, but Chicken of the Sea, the company, basically said, yeah, we're guilty of doing this kind of stuff. Working with the heads of Bumblebee to price fix, working with the heads of Starkist to do the same thing, putting fewer, what was it? They would put 5 ounces of their fish in their 6 ounce cans.
And oh, shrinkflation, right?
They would make up for it in the liquid that was put into those. Oh, and just that whole concept of price fixing. They were making sure that no company was offering. Do you remember back in the day you could get like 10 cans of tuna for $10? If you bought 10 cans, you could spend $10 on it and that's it. But then those prices started going up and it was right around the time when we started our YouTube channel, Ben. I'm telling you, 2011 to 2013.
Oh,
but anyway, there's a whole bunch you can read on this. I would highly recommend checking out. Let's see. There was a Washington Post article from 2017. Here's the title. 3 popular tuna brands conspired to fix prices. Court records allege. It's by Peter Horisky, and it's a fantastic read. Highly recommend.
Yeah. Again, you know, when you get past a certain threshold of financial success, there is often corruption. And we see this throughout history. It's not just, it's deeper than the canned tuna. Fellow conspiracy realists, you can see cyclical trends like this in pretty much any other sort of seafood. There's a huge market in counterfeit calamari. You know, it's pig buttholes, just to be very clear with everyone. There's also shark flesh sold as different. Look, it's a whole thing. What we're saying is tonight, Paul, Matt, and I are zooming in on canned seafood in particular, because for most of us, it seems like a pretty humble, approachable thing. It's cheap. It's way more affordable than the fresh stuff, especially if you don't live off the coast. It's shelf stable. Like you said, Matt, it doesn't go bad immediately. And you pointed out, you know, what was it? There was an old Ben Franklin quote about visitors to your house. It said, visitors are like fish. After about 3 days, they stink. I'm paraphrasing, but it is a real quote. And also, you know, if you are looking to enter ketosis, if you are looking to live a more healthy lifestyle, this stuff, this canned fish, is pretty great, so long as you can avoid the mercury poisoning. But Matt, that's a question. All this fish, all these formerly affordable cans of seafood, where do they come from?
Canned fish. But where does it come from?
Just so, yeah.
Does that remind you of anything?
Yeah. Is that our old DNA from How Stuff Works?
I think that's Stuff of Genius, maybe, or Infamous Inventors, one of those.
Yeah. Oh, God. Yeah. No, you're absolutely right. You nailed it. Stuff of Genius.
Yeah.
Oh, boy. All right. So it comes from all around the world. Obviously, the majority of the world is oceanic, right? Like, if you're listening to this podcast, you probably live on land, which puts you in the minority of life forms on the planet. And if we wanted to name the biggest country in the human world for seafood, we would be looking at the country of Thailand.
Oh, yes. It alone ships out between 6.5 to $7.3 billion worth of seafood every year. Every year. So if we, you know, think about what we were just talking about, sales in the U.S., about $9.5 billion worth of seafood. They're shipping out most of that.
Yeah. Yeah. Just like the canned tuna companies, right? There are tons of non-sinister reasons that Thailand would be a big player in the seafood industry. First, of course, location, right? Thailand is a peninsular country. It's absolutely riddled with coastlines and rivers. It's kind of cool stuff.
Oh, yeah. Well, in the Gulf of Thailand, that's there, that you've got Vietnam, Cambodia, and then Thailand that wraps around most of it. That's where just a vast amount of the seafood you probably eat comes from.
Yes. Yeah. It's true. It's true. And it should bother you, because there's another reason for all this maritime success. It's not just location. It's profit margin. Thai seafood exports require less investment because of a dirty, terrifying secret. There is stuff they don't want you to know. A lot of the people in the Thai fishing industry are slaves.
It's unfortunately true, and we will tell you all about it when we get back from this quick break.
I'm Scott Weinberger, journalist and former deputy sheriff. In my new podcast series, Cold Blooded, The Apollo Gym Murders, I'm embedded in the cold case investigation into the death of firefighter Billy Halpern.
It's just a shame, you know, that they took him from us.
Experience this investigation in a truly unique way, knocking on doors, uncovering new evidence, including the DNA of a potential killer.
My name is Danny Smith. I'm a detective with Miramar Police Department. This is Scott Weinberger. We're actually reopening an old case, and your name came up.
Untangling secrets that may reveal the answers to not only one murder, but almost a dozen.
I thought they were going to kill me, so I kept my mouth shut and I didn't say anything. All these years, I didn't say anything.
Listen to Cold Blooded, The Apollo Gym Murders on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Do you think Abuelita knows best? Wilmer Valderrama here, executive producer of the podcast De My Abuelita First. And we definitely do. Join us while our host Vico Ortiz and our abuelita Liliana Montenegro play matchmaker for you loving hopefuls out there. Vico?
Yes, yes, Wilmer. We are ready for another wild ride. Listen every Thursday as Abuelita Liliana and I meet three single cuties who will vie for a date with one lucky dater. Except, to get their heart, they have to win over Abuelita first.
How PG is this?
Not at all.
totally are. Abuelita's here, so bring it.
Through speed dating rounds, hilarious games, and AI, Abuelita's intuition, one contestant might be lucky enough to become the perfect match. Let's see if Chispas will fly or if these singles will be sent back to the dating apps.
Listen to De My Abuelita first as part of the My Cultura podcast network, available on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Who hasn't heard names like Achilles or Odysseus, Cassandra, Medusa? But how much do you know about them from the ancient world? Let's Talk About Myths, Baby is the podcast bringing the ancient sources to life. Greek myth and history is timeless, and unless you've been living under a rock, you have seen just how true that is today. But there is so much more to these characters and stories than what pop culture can do justice. I'm Liv Albert, the host of Let's Talk About Myths, Baby, and every week I bring you stories from the ancient world, both mythological and historical, to breathe new life into these thousands of years old stories. I'm also regularly joined by some of the most brilliant names in the field of archaeology and ancient history, authors of your favorite retellings from today, and everyone in between. Join me as I dive into the wild world of the ancient Greeks and their stories. Listen to Let's Talk About Myths, Baby on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Here's where it gets crazy. It's true. It's f-ing true. Slavery is powering seafood. Multiple investigations over years, more than a decade now, have found that Thailand's fishing industry is, as The Economist put it in 2015, quote, rife with trafficking and abuse.
Yeah. And it's been looked at multiple times over the years as a major problem. We're going to talk about all of the fixes, or let's put them in quotes, the fixes.
Quote unquote.
That, yeah, that groups and NGOs, internal Thai officials have attempted to do, like some fixes, but it's just not working, guys. Back in 2014, there was an investigation by The Guardian. And they established that, quote, large numbers of men bought and sold like animals and held against their will on fishing boats off Thailand are integral to the production of prawns, commonly called shrimp in the U.S., sold in leading supermarkets around the world, including the top four global retailers, Walmart, Carrefour, Costco, and Tesco. You will probably, if you live in the United States, I'm certain you're aware of Costco and Walmart. Tesco is pretty big in the UK, I believe, and maybe other areas in Europe. I am unaware of Carrefour.
It's also UK-based.
Okay.
Yeah, this investigation, I'm so glad you bring this up. This investigation found that a place called CP Foods, pardon our Thai pronunciation here, Charon Pok Phan, it buys what's called fish meal. Think of it like a livestock feed. It buys fish meal from suppliers that own these boats or operate these boats or buy stuff from these boats that are entirely manned by enslaved people.
It's pretty nuts. And we'll get into the mechanics of it. We've learned a lot by Ben, you shared several articles and the rabbit hole is really deep on this one. Just talking about how easy it is to put someone in an enslavement position by putting them on a boat. If you can keep that boat away from any dock, right, for an elongated period of time, if you can find ways to do that, you literally have someone trapped on a ship, on a boat. It's nuts. So, but let's talk about fish meal, because this is something I didn't really understand. I always think of the word chum when it comes to attracting sharks or something like that. I think of fish meal as chum for fish. Does that make sense? Is that even the right way to think about it?
It 100% makes sense. Chum is used to entice sharks. The same way that chicken feed or cornmeal is used to feed livestock. Fish meal is any substance that can be consumed by maritime organisms that will be sold to consumers, like salmon farms or prawn farms, etc. And, you know, Matt, it makes me think also, I'm really glad you brought up chum, because because I looked into the idea of chum, and the idea of chum is throwing the non-profitable parts of a fish into the water such that you can catch a larger fish. It's kind of a sting operation, honestly. And you know, U.S. companies have gotten in some hot water for tricking chickens into becoming cannibals in the past. That's true. Check out our episodes on the livestock industry. The idea here reminds me of the U.S. corn industry. Corn is heavily subsidized in the U.S. A huge swath of the annual corn production is never meant to reach you at a grocery store. It's meant to feed other supply chains. Also, we should do a corn episode.
No, for sure we should. But this is highly important, right? Because if you are paying little to nothing to acquire the feed that you need, right? Or the step one thing, if you don't have to pay anything for that, it's going to significantly increase the profit you make at the end of the process, right? So if companies that are able to, I guess, buy from CP Foods, who are using this slave labor, gosh, I mean, it's really about cutting costs from the top down, right? Or ignoring practices. It's what it feels like to me. We're going to get into it, but
Kimberly process. Yeah.
Let's talk about how we even found out. Like, how did anybody find out that there's slave labor going on?
Oh, yeah, dude, because some people escaped, primarily people who were kidnapped and enslaved, managed to get off these boats, these nightmarish trawlers around around this area, the Southeast Pacific. They told The Guardian, and they told UN investigators, they told NGOs that they were in absolutely hellish conditions. You would work for 20 hours without a break, and even if you did that, they would still beat the ever-loving Christ out of you, just to prove a point. There was common torture. One of the things that would happen often, if a ship got a new batch of enslaved people, they would kill one of the old slaves in front of the new guys, just to set the precedent. And yeah, and these people were at sea, on the ocean, for years and years and years. The one thing that they would be given freely, not food, methamphetamines, drugs.
Yeah. And there are personal stories from people who escape this stuff who talk of these fairly small ships that you think would hold maybe 10, 12 human beings, you know, in the hold area, I guess, below deck. But there were 30 people sometimes on board these, just like stuffed in there like sardines as they're going around trying to fish. No, I'm sorry. Is that wrong? Yeah, that's what it sounded like to me.
Yeah, you're absolutely right, dude. I mean, and these are often, by and large, not people from Thailand. These are often migrant workers. So imagine you live in Myanmar or Burma, some call it. Imagine you live in Cambodia. The economy is broken, right? And you have a family. You have to do your best to secure some sort of future for your kids. So you get a job offer from abroad, and they say, hey, you can come here to Thailand. There's a more prosperous economy. Work in this factory. We make a bunch of electronic stuff, right? Or work in this construction industry, right? We're always building buildings. And so this could be life-changing. The problem is the way it starts, because we are, to your point, talking about orders of operations. The way it starts is a broker's representative tells these people in these adjacent countries that there is a solid job, a good opportunity. You can send the money back. Your kids can go to school, stuff like that. And when you get over the border, you find out that these brokers, these kingpins of this industry, are not hooking you up with construction. They're not hooking you up with a good manufacturing job. They're selling you to these captains of these boats. Again, small ships. And these boats and their captains, I would posit they are small operators in a much larger organized crime syndicate. And Matt, we talked about this a little bit. These folks are often, quote unquote, sold for less than the price of your favorite gaming console. I think right now, the current, and this is happening now as we record, the current good price is like the equivalent of $320 US for a person's life.
Jeez. Yeah, that's intense. There are also stories just when we're talking about acquiring people for these ships. There's the process you just described, Ben. There were some others that were, it's all predatory, right? This is all super predatory. There's some that seemed less predatory, at least in the beginning, where it's a friend of a friend or somebody says, hey, there's a job opportunity on one of these boats. I did it for a year. You should do it. Or, you know, I did it for a time. You should try. And it was never stated specifically this way, but I have a hunch that it would work this way, where you may be released from your time on that boat if you can provide, you know, several other people to replace you. Or I'm imagining it could function that way, but that seems kind-hearted on the part of the people who are actually enslaving other humans. But it was weird because some of the stories were like, well, I just heard it was a friend. It was somebody I trusted. And he said I should go on this boat. So I did. And then I ended up at sea for years.
Yeah. The idea of the evil M2M kind of approach, it is true. And often these folks, once captured and enslaved, are sold from one boat to the next. There are too many stories about this. We're glad that these people escaped, but we are also, as hopefully you are, very cognizant of the profundity of this problem. There's one story, a guy who used to be a monk in Cambodia, whose name we're not going to release on air for his safety. He said the following to The Guardian. He said, quote, they kept me chained up. They didn't care about me or give me any food. They sold us like animals, but we are not animals. We are human beings. And then the stories keep pouring in, you know, like one guy, and they are overwhelmingly dudes. Often, and I know this is going to be very disturbing to a lot of us, often they are children. One victim of this trafficking who spent years at sea said he had seen at least 20 other enslaved people killed in front of him and in horrific ways, by which we mean torturous. One guy was tied to the bows of four different shipping vessels, or fish trawlers, excuse me, and the boats pulled away. It's like being quartered by horses. Unholy, unclean stuff, man.
That's messed up. It's a lot of trouble to go to. As you were saying, Ben, like, making an example to keep everybody in line. Fear for your life, because we will go to these lengths. That's
It makes me think the overseers are also on drugs, to be quite honest with you. Like, that is psychological warfare.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and the horror again is linked specifically to the largest farmer of shrimp and prawns in the world, CP Foods. Matt, you alluded earlier to the order of operations. So how does this stuff, how does this mass enslavement reach grocery store shelves?
Well, here we go in the most messed up how did this get made episode ever. CP Foods, that we mentioned before, is a Thailand operation. They will often have these slave ships that are in international waters. They're off the coast. They're right outside of Thailand, but they're in international waters. They are on a hunt for fish that aren't going to ever get canned by any canning industry. It doesn't matter. You're not going to can these fish. You might find them at a farmer's market every once in a while. You can actually go to a couple places near where I am, Ben, and find some of the trash fish or fish considered trash. And they're often sold for exactly like the actual species names of these fish that most people would not eat, but they are consumed. But they catch this trash fish. They send it off to a place to get, I guess, just turned into the meal with those other things that you're talking about, Ben, like just all the stuff that goes into the grinding process that creates the fish meal that then goes to feeding the prawns.
And from there, CP buys that fish meal. Think of like hot dogs, folks. Think of hot dog ingredients, right? Shady, sketchy hot dogs. You don't want to know what part of the pigs go in there.
Sketchy hot dogs. That is such just a good phrase for something. I'm going to figure it out.
Okay. You got it. And so this company, CP, they will buy this fish meal, and I don't want to pick on them too much. We'll give them their stand at the soapbox in a bit. But they buy this fish meal from this shady supply chain, and then they feed it to these prawns, these shrimp that they have in their farms. And from there, it sounds convoluted to say it this way, but the shrimp eat the fish meal that is gathered by slaves. And after you have that kind of double blind and that proxy of order of operations, that those shrimp, that seafood ends up in all sorts of unexpected places. We mentioned Walmart, we name check Costco, UK chains, Tesco, Carrefour, but also like Aldi's, Morrison's, bunch of companies in Iceland. What do they all have in common? Dude, they sell frozen and pre-cooked shrimp in a convenient little bag. Maybe even like a little microwave meal. I want a shrimp stir fry, but I only have 3 minutes and 30 seconds.
So are we saying there are other big name food companies that buy this shrimp that then go into their like frozen prawns and that kind of stuff? Or is it only stuff that is put out there by CP Foods?
100%. It's the problem is with this. With this conspiracy, it's somewhat difficult to trace every falling prawn because there are so many opportunities to obfuscate. There are so many opportunities to play the matryoshka doll shell company thing There are just so many opportunities to pass the buck here. And the weirdest thing, CP Foods readily admits that slave labor is part of their supply chain. They're not doing a matrix dodge. They're doing like a shrug.
I don't understand.
I don't get it either. Again, it's a global corporation. The United Kingdom's managing director of CP Foods back in like 2014, 2015, a guy named Bob Miller. Investigators contacted him and he said the following thing.
We're not here to defend what is going on. We know there's issues with regard to the raw material that comes into port, but to what extent that is, we just don't have the visibility.
For real, bro? I mean, like, for real? We're not, of course, saying that these people, these employees of this vast corporation are readily, actively, you know, rubbing their hands, Monty Burns style, trying to enslave people. But that sounds kind of cold, you know?
Well, yeah, it makes me wonder if it's just with the prawn fishing or if it actually extends out further in just in the waters there in the Gulf of Thailand. Like, how common is it for... because we're talking about, ultimately, trash fish fishing that is being done by enslaved human beings that ends up feeding prawns that goes, you know, all over the place. I wonder how much that exists, because there's fish meal that goes into salmon fisheries, tuna fisheries, all of the same kinds of things. And I wonder how
goes into how much dog food, cat food.
Well, yeah, no, you're right. I wonder how much of it is much further widespread.
It's pervasive, we could say. And we're honing in on, again, the facts, the things that can be proven and have been proven. We're going to pause for a word from our sponsors, and then we will return with more.
I'm Scott Weinberger, journalist and former deputy sheriff. In my new podcast series, Cold-Blooded, The Apollo Gym Murders, I'm embedded in the cold case investigation into the death of firefighter Billy Halpern.
It's just a shame, you know, that they took him from us.
Experience this investigation in a truly unique way, knocking on doors, uncovering new evidence, including the DNA of a potential killer.
My name is Danny Smith. I'm a detective with Miramar Police Department. This is Scott Weinberger. We're actually reopening an old case, and your name came up.
Untangling secrets that may reveal the answers to not only one murder, but almost a dozen.
I thought they were going to kill me, so I kept my mouth shut, and I didn't say anything. All these years, I didn't say anything.
Listen to Cold-Blooded, The Apollo Gym Murders on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Do you think Abuelita knows best? Wilmer Valderrama here, executive producer of the podcast De My Abuelita First. And we definitely do. Join us while our host, Vico Ortiz, and our abuelita, Liliana Montenegro, play matchmaker for you loving hopefuls out there. Vico?
Yes, yes, Wilmer. We are ready for another wild ride. Listen every Thursday as Abuelita Liliana and I meet three single cuties who will vie for a date with one lucky dater. Except, to get their heart, they have to win over Abuelita first.
How PG is this?
Not at all. Totally are. Abuelita's here, so bring it.
Through speed dating rounds, hilarious games, and AI, Abuelita's intuition, one contestant might be lucky enough to become the perfect match. Let's see if Chispas will fly or if these singles will be sent back to the dating apps.
Listen to De My Abuelita First as part of the My Cultura podcast network, available on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Who hasn't heard names like Achilles or Odysseus, Cassandra, Medusa? But how much do you know about them from the ancient world? Let's Talk About Myths, Baby is the podcast bringing the ancient sources to life. Greek myth and history is timeless, and unless you've been living under a rock, you have seen just how true that is today. But there is so much more to these characters and stories than what pop culture can do justice. I'm Liv Albert, the host of Let's Talk About Myths, Baby, and every week I bring you stories from the ancient world, both mythological and historical, to breathe new life into these thousands of years old stories. I'm also regularly joined by some of the most brilliant names in the field of archaeology and ancient history, authors of your favorite retellings from today, and everyone in between. Join me as I dive into the wild world of the ancient Greeks and their stories. Listen to Let's Talk About Myths, Baby on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Okay, we're back. So before these relatively thorough investigations, again, like Matt and I mentioned, they're honing in not on all seafood. They're honing in specifically on the fish meal to farmed shrimp to your grocery store connection. It is true. It is happening. Even before this, the United Nations and a bevy of NGOs, non-governmental organizations, raised alarm over this insidious, normalized, industrialized slavery in the Thai fishing industry. We've got a quote from Aidan McQuaid, director of an NGO called Anti-Slavery International. And Aidan is pretty blunt, I would say, pretty explicit about the issue here.
Aidan says, if you buy prawns or shrimp from Thailand, you will be buying the produce of slave labor.
Oh, oh boy. We got to read the labels, huh, Matt?
Yeah. We just have to stay balanced here. And just have to say this, Ben, we have talked about NGOs in the past. It is, you can't throw shade at every NGO that is doing, you know, work in other countries and internationally. You just have to be aware that some NGOs are built a little differently than other NGOs. And you never know what the, it's tough to know what the real motivations are and the players behind an NGO are, right? In this case, pretty on the nose, this is the Anti-Slavery International NGO. You kind of get what their aims are. Just putting that out there as people who've listened to our previous episodes.
Absolutely. And I really appreciate that because it's true. NGOs can function as
governmental organizations.
Yeah. 100%. That's the problem. You know what I mean? There's a reason that a lot of nations don't like the Peace Corps in their backyard, you know, and that is something we do need to keep front of mind whenever you hear a think tank or whenever you hear a statement from some high muckety muck in something that is not quite a government agency. They may have some aims, you know, Black Monday murders and so on.
Ben, I want to, before we move in to the next section here, just want to shout out one of the sources you found. It's from the Lowy, L-O-W-Y Institute.org. You can read this article. It's titled Caught in the Net, Slavery on Southeast Asian Seas. It's by J.J. Rose. It's an excellent read. It's written very much in a storytelling cadence and with language there that really takes you here and lets you see through the eyes of some of the individuals going through this stuff. So just want to shout that out.
Yeah, agreed. And again, it is, I keep overusing the word heartbreaking. This is a real thing. There are real people who, through no fault of their own, are enslaved. Now, as we record. And so what do you do in this case? If you, like us, are interested in the idea of not having people enslaved, then you would go to an institution, right? You would go to the force that is supposed to maintain rule of law in this country. So we'll go to the Thai government. When asked about this, again, insidious, normalized economy of scale, enslavement of people, all for the sake of seafood, the former Thai ambassador to the United States said, quote, "Thailand is committed to combating human trafficking. We know a lot more needs to be done, but we have also made very significant progress to address the problem." And Thailand being already a hub and a transit point for all sorts of human trafficking, non-related to the maritime industry, they consider this a national priority. But if you look at it, if you look at the years of research, if you look at, again, Matt, the stories of human beings who survived this, it appears that the fishing industry in Thailand is at least partially run by organized crime and, at the minimum, parts of the government, officials in the government, factions of the government are on the payroll. They're turning a blind eye on purpose.
Yeah. It does feel like that. Let's talk about some of the things they did. There's this organization that was created in response to, you know, the revelations that there's, you know, oh, something terrible is happening. The Sustainable Seafood Task Force was created. This is an insular industry kind of group. It's made up of the people that buy, you know, like supermarkets that buy this stuff, like wholesale buyers that will buy a whole bunch and then resell to supermarkets and things like that. Anybody, it's really just a bunch of different groups that source these prawns from Thailand. It was set up in 2015, and it's supposed to bring, at least according to The Guardian, transparency and accountability to the supply chain. Fix things, right? All those years ago in 2015. We've got from that same Guardian article a quote here from Steve Trent, who is the chief executive of something called the Environmental Justice Foundation. The EJF.
Oh, okay.
He's got a pretty solid quote here when speaking about the Sustainable Seafood Task Force. I'm just going to rattle it off. You ready, Ben?
Oh, I'm so stoked.
Steve says, "Never in my career have I seen a process more focused on talking in hotel rooms in Bangkok rather than actually committing to using their influence to create real change."
Holy evil. Oh boy. Oh no. Yeah, that's the thing, Matt. That's the thing, right? Like there
by the way, in the Guardian article, then quote, "The Sustainable Seafood Task Force did not respond to a request for comment."
Gosh, well, call the hotel room. You know what I mean? You got to call room service first. Call the front desk. Excuse me. So there is an existential threat to this industry, right? Because we have to ask ourselves the question, which apparently people are asking themselves in hotel rooms in Phuket and Chiang Mai and Bangkok right now. Can Thailand's fishing industry survive without the mass enslavement of innocent people? The answer is no. The answer is probably not. And we have to ask what can be done. Like those folks. God, classic Steve. I love that quote. The attempts to combat this, folks, they kind of seem like lip service. You know, it reminds me, Matt, it reminds me of the Blood Diamond industry before synthetic diamonds were technologically feasible And back when De Beers still had its colonial stranglehold on resources of the African continent, there was this thing created called the Kimberley Process. And the Kimberley Process was this idea that one could, through various registration and certification barriers, ensure that diamonds were mined and cut and refined and sold in an equitable way. It was a total grift. It did not benefit the people who live in diamond-rich areas. And
It was like a tracking and self-reporting system, right?
Mm-hmm.
And anytime there's an insular industry-based self-reporting thing, history has shown us it doesn't go so great. It just doesn't go so great because there are reasons to not do it above board. And it's mostly profit, which is, you know, the basis of the company. It's capitalism.
We're going to have the foxes self-regulate, you know? We're going to have the foxes report on their hen house maneuvers, okay? And we're going to call it we're going to call it something cutesy. We're calling it the Kitsune process, right?
Nice. Well, but it really reminds me of chocolate when we talked about that in the past, in the cocoa farms and all that, where there is child slave labor happening.
Still
there is, but there were processes that, who's that big company? It's not an evil empire. It's just a company. What was it?
Well, it's Nestle.
Oh, that's it.
Yes, famous for the manufacture of the Nestle Crunch Bar, also the famous for the idea of privatizing water, also famous for child labor in the world of chocolate. Nestle, our good old pals, the Henry Kissingers of chocolate, have decided to institute a kind of Kimberley process for, weirdly enough, fish. Because you didn't know Nestle was into fish, huh?
Mm.
Think about it.
No.
Yeah. Their idea was that, again, one could institute certain barriers of registration, of compliance, such that you could say, we got this stuff from a supply chain that does not involve mass enslavement.
But again, it's so weird because I don't know that I could sit down and tell you, here's my solution to making sure all the boats operating to catch fish in the Gulf of Thailand don't have slave labor on them in any way in my supply chain that I control. You know, I don't know how I could do that.
Yeah.
Seriously, like how would you prove it unless you had some kind of security firm that is literally checking up on every boat that is working for you?
Of 10 to 30 people in the Pacific Ocean, right? Checking the transparency of a factory that gets daily shipments of trash fish with no names attached, right? How would you do that? You know, I love that you're bringing us up, man. We're not necessarily condemning the government of Thailand,
and we're not even condemning Nestle. Really, it's like trying to come up with solutions, but it doesn't work. And it also keeps them in business, you know?
Right. Yeah. You know, it's like, if a car manufacturer started an NGO or an initiative of some sort to investigate whether tires are necessary, right? They're going to have a horse in the race, right? They're going to have a little bit of confirmation bias. Want to shout out a Netflix documentary called Seaspiracy, hashtag no pun left behind, which examines this along with a boatload of other conspiracies that we have explored in the past. And Matt, when we get to the idea of condemnation, you're right. We're not crapping on people who are doing their best. You know, and there's a ton of folks out there in Thailand, in the Gulf right now, who are making an honest living, right? And they're not enslaved, and they're not enslaving people. But what we are doing, what we do condemn, is the idea of enslavement in any shape, form, or fashion. And the results are painfully clear. Even if it is not immediately apparent to all of us in the grocery store, the world's largest seafood exportation industry inherently relies on slavery. And no one's going to do anything about it.
Yeah. Some folks will make podcasts about it, I guess.
So from our little corner of the global woods, and our little podcast here, gathered around the campfire in the dark, we want to ask you, fellow conspiracy realist, what are these powerful entities actually doing, aside from lip service, to combat this clear problem? Let's keep in mind that Thailand is a monarchy and does not play around with the power of the king. The current monarch could likely obliterate this practice with just one statement and could save not thousands of people's lives, but hundreds of thousands of people's lives. As we record this evening, there is no reliable estimate on the number of people enslaved in this fishing practice.
Well, what do you think? Why don't you let us know? You can find us all over the place. We are Conspiracy Stuff on YouTube, Twitter, and Facebook. We are Conspiracy Stuff Show on Instagram and TikTok. No threads yet, at least that I'm aware of. Maybe that's a new thing coming at some point. I won't even be aware, really. but if you don't want to use social media to contact us, you can give us a call.
That's true. On a telephonic device, the power is yours. The number is 1-833-STDWYTK. You'll hear a voice and then you'll hear a beep like so, beep, and then you got 3 minutes. Run wild. Let those ponies run. All we ask is that you tell us your story, tell us your nickname or street name or moniker you always wanted, and let us know whether we can use your name and or message on the air. Take care, folks. Sometimes the abyss calls back. Most importantly, if you need more than 3 minutes, we want to hear from you. We want to see those links. We want to see those photos. Take us to the edge of the rabbit hole. We will do the rest. All you have to do is drop us a line at our good old-fashioned email address. We read every letter we get where we are.
Conspiracy@iHeartRadio.com. Stuff They Don't Want You to Know is a production of iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.
I'm Scott Weinberger, journalist and former deputy sheriff. In my new podcast series, Cold Blooded, I'm embedded in the cold case investigation into the death of firefighter Billy Halpern. Experience this investigation in a truly unique way, untangling secrets that may reveal the answers to not only one case, but almost a dozen. Listen to Cold Blooded, The Apollo Gym Murders on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
In the recent history of documentary filmmaking, one scene stands out above all. The hot mic bathroom confession of Robert Durst in The Jinx. Now the person responsible for that moment, Sareb Kaufman, stepson of the victim, friend of the murderer, star of the documentary, for the first time ever, shares why he believes you're watching the furthest thing from the truth on this exclusive episode of Murder Homes. Listen to Murder Homes on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I used to have so many men.
How this beguiling woman in her 50s...
She looked like a million bucks.
...scams a bunch of famous athletes out of untold fortunes...
Nearly $10 million was all gone.
It's just unbelievable.
Hide your money in your old rich man, because she is on the prowl.
Listen to Queen of the Con, Season 5, The Athlete Whisperer, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.